Aloha mai kākou. My name is Ke Ola Nakaahiki Rapozo.
You know, what would you say you are if you have to, like identify yourself as a workman or technician or?
That's a question that I kind of ask myself all the time. When people ask me, or when I refer to what we do, I call it the thing. I say just this thing that we do, right? Like to say that we just design T-shirts, or just design accessories, or just design spaces, or just design hats, whatever. It suggests that you're set in one, like you're pot in one mindset. But I believe it's the bigger idea is the process that you create when you're working, right? So like for me, like I apply the same process to designing a hat, shoe, backpack, T-shirt, as I do to designing a space, doing art, creating content strategy, whatever. To me, it's the same process. So, yeah, long-winded answer is a creative. Short synopsis is I'm a designer, I guess.
What is that process?
I think it's part. It's a mashing of things that I've sort of just. It's an amalgamation, or it's an aggregated thing throughout my career that I sort of just make into a protocol. So, part of it is following traditional Hawaiian mindset is you always start with setting intent, asking for permission, then entering, right? So just that idea of setting protocols is what I apply to everything. But what that protocols entail is this sort of very loose, non-rigid idea of, I don't know, I'm doing a shoe today, and the shoe is needs to have a story of, and this is completely hypothetical. I wanna say it's for the Honolulu Marathon, and I want to create a story based on Makua, Kamehameha's messenger. That idea right there, I'm setting my intent. I'm starting to visualize what the story would be. I don't even know what the shoe is gonna look like at all, but I'm starting. Makua was a messenger, and he would take messages from one side of Hawaii Island to the other side of Hawaii Island. Say Tupohaku, one black, one white. In particular, when he's in this Konane battle with Kelvin Mauhili, he has his messenger take two stones, one black, one white, and if he picks white, like scrap. If he like picks the black, then we're going to war. To me, right there, that's a whole concept for a shoe. You know what I mean? I'll base it something around there.
So many images in that, right?
Right. So the process is basically built within, or distilled within that context, right? But my protocol has to start with, set my intent, ask for permission, and then now all the other things sort of play in, like visually, colors, my design toolbox, materials. It's just. Sorry, I don't know if that's accurately painting a picture of process, but for that idea, that shoe concept, completely hypothetical, that's how I would start that project. And then, my process within that would I would start writing my notes and start highlighting the things that I find endearing about the story. And then from that story, I would sort of distill imagery from it. And then that imagery would then play into some sort of form, the shoe. If that makes sense. I mean, that was sort of like a rough idea
That's
of how my process would work for designing.
really revealing, Keola. Where do you think you get your design sense?
I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit inherited. My mom was very creative. In the 80s, we had a craft fair business where we would make miniature Hawaiian. I don't know how to accurately place it, but or categorize it. But we were doing the solution was Christmas trees. Back then, and this may sound we couldn't really afford Christmas trees, so we would go up to Waihole. My dad would go and cut down pine trees, and pine trees would be like the Hawaiian Christmas tree, right? So we would then make our own ornaments for the tree. So it would be like miniature ipuhekes, miniature pu'ilis. We would do makinis, and it started to become very popular. So we would go on the craft fair circuit, Thomas Square, Ala Moana Shopping Center. We'd pack up our van, head to Hilo. We'd do it for years, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. And we would sell these little miniature. They were basically Christmas ornaments, but then they would start
putting it on gaining, my rearview mirror.
Right, they would gain popularity. This was 80, I believe, like 81 to about 80. I'll say to about 85, 86 is sort of like the core. Is that's how we lived. That's how we made our money. So I think partial was that, and then I think for me it's just. My insatiable appetite to consume content, and sort of like and disseminate it back uh-huh. out.
So who were you looking at as far as other artists or graphic designers or
as a kid?
Oh, I don't know, because your designs I'm just trying to figure out how you know what to do and when something's right.
Right. I don't think. Oh, here's a question. Right. Is a design finished? Ever finished? I don't think it's ever finished. Ever. I could toil on a graphic for 10 minutes, or it could take an entire year. I'll keep revisiting it. To me, you look at something one way, at this time of the day, and then another time of the day, you look at it another way, and then it changes, and then you want to go back in there, and I never know when, to me, it's ready when it needs to be on the board, and it needs to be put into production.
It's a timing factor.
It's a timing thing, yeah, The adverse effect of being creative is I have a business, and the business, our business is creativity, right? Or is to yield merchandise from creativity. So at some point it has to be on the wall, it has to be put into production, and it has to be sold. So if not, I'd just be a graphic designer by hobby, I guess, or a designer by hobby.
Do you ever think, oh, people are into this these days, or something like that?
No. Not really. I try not to look too much. I think that may be a misleading statement. I think that my mindset is really current. So because my mindset's really current, I'm sort of, the solutions I can provide are now, right?
How do you keep your mindset current? Scanning content. What content? What do you look at?
So I had this conversation yesterday with Donovan Kiloha, and he had asked me, how do I synthesize this content? And I was like, brah, Donovan, I probably go through about 100 plus hours a month of just content, right? Like audiobooks, podcasts, YouTube, like books.
Do you scan, Instagram pages?
Instagram. It's
Pinterest.
Pinterest. I'm on Pinterest. I love architecture. I love furniture design. I love graphic design. I love clothing design. I love car design. I love thoughtful ways of disseminating content. Different content strategies. I like that stuff.
Well, how do you even find out about different content strategies?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just...
Are you on your phone all the time?
I am. My wife hates it. But it's just, I've always been that way. You know, before the phones, it was magazines, it was books, it was before the internet. I mean, I went to college during the non-internet phase, and I like to stack things. I like to multitask. So I found that my learning technique is to do it right now. And I had a problem with learning in high school. I just didn't understand how to learn. So I got horrible grades. But I didn't know what that meant, right? Like, nobody like sat me down and be like, "Hey, Keola, this is how you learn a subject." You sit in a room, they give you a book, and you're supposed to do homework from it. I didn't get that part, right?
How do you learn?
Until I got it was a really simple strategy. I had an economics teacher in junior high school, Mrs. Goto. I credit her with sort of turning the light bulb on. She had this, you walk into a room, she had this syllabus on the board. It told you exactly what you want. If you wanted a D, this is how much you do. You wanted an F, this is how much you do. Oh, you want an A, this is how much you do. And it was, I was like, that's it? That's all I have to do to get an A. Okay, I'm going to try and get an A. So I ended up getting a B plus in that class. It was the highest grade I ever got. It was economics. We had $50 to buy stocks, local stocks. This is in 92. And I chose a construction company called Schuler Homes. And I ended up making the most amount of money in the class. I was like, damn, I guess I can learn. Or I guess I didn't really understand what that meant, right? So fast forward back to college. I think I had, for me, I applied that same technique to, if I just do my homework now, I know how much homework I got to get done, right? If I do everything before I leave school, I ensure that my work is done, so I don't have to procrastinate. So I would just went to the library. So I left class. I would have class. I would leave class, go to the library, made friends with the librarians, and every day that I was on campus, not in class, I was in the library, and I sort of stacked things that way. And that's how I started to
get things done.
Get things done, yeah. By just categorizing it, putting it into like a system, a process, and then I started to find books and then magazines, and then it opened up, I always wanted to design. I always loved design. I just didn't know what to do. So the librarian was like, "Hey, there's this program at ACC for clothing design. I'll help you get into it." I was like, "You can help me." She's like, "Yeah, you've been here for like 3 years. You know, you should be able to, do you have enough credit?" So I went and see my counselor, had enough credits, and I transferred, and then I went to design school. I mean, it was just a matter of finding out a process for myself and then applying it. It was super simple at that point. But before that, nobody took the time to sit me down and, you know what I mean? Like, science, history, all these things were just sort of not important. Like, I sat in class. It's not like I didn't go to class, but I went to class and I was like, this, I don't know. I don't understand this stuff. This stuff's not interesting to me. But then once you show me this is how you win, or this is how you, you know, like, school is about getting good grades so you can go to college, and then from college so you can get your degree and then get a job. Oh, that's how you win in life? You know, I just kind of figured it out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just thinking about, a lot of people could have gone to the library, sat there, and not gotten it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there was something else going on.
Well, I didn't want to just sit in the library.
Yeah.
Right? I wanted to optimize my time there. So I optimized my time there by doing my homework. So that once I left campus, everything with that part of my life was done for the day. Then I can move on to work or whatever else I was doing.
Wow, Fitted is just such a juggernaut now. Actually, the whole design thing, right, for you?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I hope it is. I don't see it that way, but...
But I just love now that you've been pulled into the fine arts arena by the Contact Show. Mm. It was brilliant to have you there. and you looked at all the pieces. Tell me what you saw.
Well, first of all, Maile, she has this thing, huh? She's just firing. And
yep. Maile Meyer.
Maile Myers, yeah. She's been an advocate of mine for quite some time. I don't know, maybe she saw something in me or the possibilities that maybe I didn't even see. Because I completely honest, I was very intimidated by the task. Just I've never done that. She actually pushed me to do my first like personal art piece, right? I was like, "Dad, you want me to like an art piece?" She's like, "You're gonna be fantastic." Not knowing that I've been doing art my whole entire life, this goes back to like someone showing me how to learn, right? Or how to apply my thoughts in a constructive way for a purpose. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna be a curator. I don't know what that means. And she looked at my board, and you know, I have all my collections and designs up on my boards. And she's like, it's exactly what you do here. I was like, that's it. She's like, yeah. I was like, okay, if you think I'll be good at it, I'm absolutely in for the experience. So,
well, it's your voracious eyes applied to the work that's being made in Hawaii today.
Right. I didn't understand that, though. It was just simply seeing it as I'm going to be looking at artwork and sort of distilling a format or fitting it in like Tetris, right? So as, and Michael Rooks, he was amazing to sort of help me distill it in a more focused manner. It was very, the first minute that I walked into the gallery space, and there was just stacks of artwork, and I was like, okay, so what are we doing here? and Josh was like, okay, guys, you know, start. And I just looked at everything, and I was like, I was kind of overwhelmed for a second. And then Michael was like, let's just work on this one thing. Let's work on the layout of the gallery. Let's figure out how we want to present the show. And as we were going through the sort of like the branding and the idea of zones and contact zones, the show kind of laid out itself. When we walked in there, the walls were shotgun from front to back. It was kind of on you, like, you know, kind of similar to if you're on like Avenue Americas in New York, and you're kind of like, it feels like people are just on you. That's how the gallery felt when we walked in there. So Michael and I started playing with the models, and we're like, dude, let's just open it up. Let's each wall stand on its own and sort of create a disruption, a contact zone for the viewer, right? And have the artists be able to tell their story in these like slight disruptions. So if you look into, when you walk in, you get a reveal, but you don't get the whole reveal. It's sort of like abruptly, it stops you, and you're like, oh, I see Beek's wall back there. Man, that looks really interesting, but this I don't even know how you would explain it, but these swatches of sandalwood and little chips of wood with tarp, this is very interesting to me. What is this about? So now I'm focused on this. It's sort of an idea of narrowing your attention, right? Like you see everything, but you're forced to be narrowed to one wall, and then you move on to the next wall, and then you move on to the back walls, and then so it's not everything at once. And that's sort of so once we established that, and we established how we wanted the place to talk, to speak to the viewer, then we started to fill the walls with content, basically. And we laid everything out, and we just started critiquing. And it was very fun. That part was very fun. Because what we might have thought in the beginning certainly changed when we ended, right? There was a lot of editing. There was a lot of distilled thought per piece, per wall, and then the entire show, right? So like, there was a conversation that we had at each pass. So we'd pass one, pass two, and then we would come and revisit it again. Like, okay, this may speak better here.
Well, what was the overall feeling you wanted people to leave with?
Well, I think that there's a few objectives that we wanted. One is to stop and experience each artist, right, in this contact zone, in this zone, each zone. And then two, overall was how the relationship between the different mediums work together. And then three, the overall quality of art being made in Hawaii. So I think those three things was sort of our goal to present.
For you, did you see any trends or commonalities?
No, I don't think I seen any. I was really intrigued by the variety of things. It was interesting to have a single topic, right? And then have the topic played out through the number of pieces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting experience.
Did you notice, like, what were some major themes that people wanted to work on?
There were some themes of current contact. I believe the missile scare was one. I thought that was a great narrative. I thought the demographic, the wood chip pieces with the tarp, and then the whole, I thought that was fantastic. I thought Kalaho's piece was fantastic. Imaikalani's pieces were fantastic because of the range on how it was his weaving work from 25 years ago until today, and sort of how that contacts each other in this lineage of weaving. And his approach to, you know, first thing he says, I'm not a weaver. I'm like, but this is beautiful. He's like, but I'm not a weaver. Mm-hmm.
He's just a ki'i maker.
Yeah, it's, but it's beautiful, right? The media pieces I thought were very thought-provoking. The sound piece in the Nano Gallery was fantastic.
Yeah. Roger Bong.
Yes, Aloha God's Soul. I think the trend was that everybody was very individual. I didn't see, there wasn't anything that was, there wasn't anything that was very similar in sense. Had a lot of Kanaka stuff, which I was very excited about. And then what I thought was very interesting was how non-native locals approached contact. I thought that narrative was very interesting because they're very aware of not being Kanaka, but very aware of them being tied to place, right? And how the contact affects them, and then how they disseminate it back. I love that. I love that part. Does that make sense?
It does. Mm. Yeah, this show every year just hits you in different ways, you know, to the gut, though, really. Mm. Yeah, this year is incredible. Do you think if this were the one show that someone saw out of the year, I mean, I really think they'd be getting a good representation of Hawaii artists. I don't know what they could say about Hawaii artists, though, you know?
Right. What I would like for them to say is that there's quality here. Given the opportunity to leverage more opportunities, given the opportunity to leverage more time, more space, I think the local artists, I don't even want to say local artists, they're artists, right? We need more opportunities. We need more people giving us a look, a nod, that we're not just, those are just artists in Hawaii. I believe we're just artists that can push boundaries, that can create something that's singularly important to this place, but like global in impact, right? Because of our secret, it's not our secret sauce, really. It's just our unique understanding of place that gives us an edge, I think, over anyone making content, because we have this very, I mean, we're in the middle of the ocean, the most remote landmass in the world, and it could be considered a handicap. I don't think so, though. I think it's an asset. I think it gives us an edge over people. Gives us something to talk about, you know, visually, creatively, content-wise. It's just an opportunity for us to have an exclusive idea, mindset. Now, how are we going to share it with people? I think that that's important. I think that that's, you know, people love familiarity for them to attach to, but I also think that there's value in the non-familiar, right?
Freshness,
yeah.
Huh. Yeah. But see, now, somehow getting out of Hawaii might involve more of that post-internet kind of art that Michael was talking about, right? That you're just full on in it, you know, just by your natural progression of development.
Right. I often get asked what our ancestors would be doing today. It's kind of a heavy question. And I remember when I was first asked that, I was perplexed. I was like, oh man, I don't know. Here we go, playing into my inferiority or my insecurities on living up to my ancestors, right? And I sat for a little bit and I was like, wait, I'm Hawaiian. I'm in this space. I'm creating. Maybe I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Or maybe I'm doing I am my ancestors. We just have all these things now around us. And we have more noise. We have more things to sort of partition in our day. We're not just singularly looking at solutions for navigating or singularly looking at solutions for food. We're looking for solutions to life, how to navigate in one of the most expensive places in the world, how to raise children in a post-public school. I think we have the highest concentrated private schools, right? It's very expensive. If you have a young child, toddler, the amount you pay for daycare. Just like those things, right? Those are the things that are immediately in front of us. So it's hard for us to sort of narrow our attention to just the solution to live. There's many different solutions that we have to figure out during the day. And being a young Hawaiian, trying to create solutions for not only my immediate ohana, but also my employees and my coworkers and my, you know. So, I was like, oh, I am. I guess I am my ancestors. In this modern context,
just proceeding with some ingenuity and courage.
Yeah, I guess having the balls to just fail. Like, there's no, you know, it doesn't bother me to fail. I come from the country. I come from this place where, you know, your idols are the unsavory type, right? Or like people just trying to make it like everybody else, and it's a lot easier to do one thing than it is to go to college and like figure out
a worldwide business.
Yeah. I guess it's harder to do that, you know, put action to an idea. As a modern Hawaiian, I guess I am living in the post internet age. This is how we live our life now. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm curious to see what happens. We're working on it.
Thank you so much.
Did I cover enough?
You did. Okay. So much. We got it here.